Hello, everyone. This is Mike Quincy, Connecting the Light. I welcome back today Jenny Smedley, who is very much involved in reincarnation and past lives. In fact, she's written 6 books, and I'm sure we're going to have yet another very interesting program. Are you there, Jenny?
Yes, I'm Mike. Hi.
Great. It's nice, as I said, it's nice to have you back. We had an excellent program the last time. Now, what everybody, I think, likes to know, me included, is where did all this start for you? Did you know that you had this interest or in these type of subjects when you were quite young?
No, Mike. I was actually brought up a Catholic, and as you know, the Christian Church doesn't really accept reincarnation. But I left the church when I was about 19. I became a bit disillusioned with it. And for quite a few years after that, I was in a bit of a wilderness. I've always been a spiritual person, and I've always been somebody who's sort of joked about past lives and thought it was quite a cool idea, really. But I never had any real belief in it, no.
Right. I mean, were you ever psychic, or was this simply a subject that you suddenly took a great interest in?
I wasn't psychic as such, but I think that as children, we're all a lot more spiritual than we are when we grow up. And I had quite a few experiences when I was growing up that, looking back, you know, I realized that at the time I kind of expected miracles. I kind of expected angels around me, although I didn't know that's what they were. And looking back, I know that I was saved and helped quite a few times. But I wasn't, I was intuitive, I suppose you'd say. I wouldn't say I was psychic. Depends on your definition of the word, I guess.
Well, you've mentioned angels. I believe I'm correct in saying that your first book was called Past Life Angels.
That's
can you
right.
give us some explanation for that particular title and what the book was about, sort of briefly?
Yeah, this is actually quite interesting. I came to realise, after I understood about past lives, I came to realise that we're given nudges and hints, some of them quite heavy and not altogether very pleasant, in order to get us to wake up to who we really are. And who we really are, our whole soul, is actually all our past lives as well as the life we're living now. And I came to realise that we got these nudges, but we often ignored them. And that led me on to understand and communicate with what I called past life angels at the time, which were angels that I believe are with us from the moment we're a spark in the ground right through every lifetime, talking to us in between lifetimes, helping us to decide what lifetime we should have next and what went wrong in the previous one, as they usually do. Recently, though, I've been asked to write a new book of Hay House called Soul Angels. Now, to all intents and purposes, these are the same angels, but I've come to call them soul angels because I had a rather startling revelation about them. And that is that what I believed was true, but I hadn't actually gone far enough. It's a bit of a complex subject to explain in just a few sentences, but basically I've come to believe that past life angels are actually in part us. It's our divine part. And so
do you think that is what some people call their higher selves, that the higher selves and these angels, as you call them, are one and the same?
Yeah, I do. I mean, I've known for some time that, you know, when you're alive on the earth, there's also a part of you in spirit.
This
is a good thing to understand, because it means that some people, especially older people that I've spoken to about reincarnation, are a bit upset about it, because they have always been brought up to believe that when they die, their loved ones will be waiting for them. And they said to me, but, you know, if they're going to be reincarnated, they won't be there. And I don't like that idea. But, of course, they will be there. Their spiritual part will be there. as you say, their higher self will be there. And this is very comforting also to mothers who lose young babies, and, you know, it's terribly, terribly traumatic for them to think of that little baby soul going into spirit and being alone. But, of course, their divine part will be there to meet them, so that baby will actually never be without its mother. It's all very comforting, isn't it? I think I've gone off track a bit there, Mike. You have to drag me back. I tend to go off on tangents.
Right. You've actually said, I believe, of your book, Souls Don't Lie, that it's using past life regression to heal the life you are in.
Yes.
Can you comment on that?
Yes, I absolutely believe that. I totally, absolutely believe it. And I've seen it work so many times. It doesn't seem to matter what kind of problems you've got in this life, whether it's health or financial or relationship or career, whether you've got phobias, obsessions, nightmares, it all seems to come back to things we've brought through from our past lives. I've seen so many people healed, physically healed, their relationships healed, their life opened up and started again, all because they've actually come to remember their past lives. Because it, especially if you remember more than one, because you start to see a pattern and you realise that you perhaps have been making the same mistake over and over again. Or one of the worst things that we bring through with us is guilt. And this leads to feelings of lack of self-confidence, lack of self-worth. It's very distressing that the suicide rate in the world has gone up, especially in young people. And I think a lot of this is due to guilt over events that happened in past lives. Mm. And guilt is really the worst of all emotions. It's totally useless. And when it comes to past lives, it's totally unwarranted, because you simply can't blame yourself for something that a person did who was merely an envelope for your soul. As somebody that your soul has evolved from, you're not that person anymore. So what they did in their physical body, you know, shouldn't be something you feel guilty about. So when people have this revealed to them, and they can usually look upon themselves then with some sympathy when they see what they went through in that lifetime. And it doesn't matter what they did, it doesn't matter even if they did something really bad. It's a little bit like regressing back to your childhood and welcoming the child that was you back into you. You can also do that with your past life personas.
Right.
Not only that, but I know in my own particular case, when I was taken back to the life I lived as Madeline Fitzgerald in the 17th century, which is the story told in Souls Don't Lie, I was not only cured of guilt that I'd had at the time, but also I got back a part of myself. I have another little theory that sometimes ghosts are a part of ourselves that we left behind from a past life. And the house that I used to live in back in that life was in fact haunted. And once I went there, I gained something I'd always lost. It was a bit of courage, a bit of self-respect, really, in that I was able at last to say no sometimes, which is something I was never capable of doing before. Came as a bit of a shock for some people when I changed, but it was all healing. It was all good.
Yeah. Do you mean when you talk of people coming into life with guilt that they have a feeling of guilt but cannot relate it to anything in their past life?
Mm.
And if they come to you with your past life therapy, can you actually open them up to what the lives were or the reasons?
Yeah, absolutely. Yes, they don't really recognise that what they're suffering from is guilt at the time. They just feel worthless. They feel like they don't deserve happiness. Well, one very good example was a lady who came to me, and she constantly got partners who were really bad to her. She had men who were controlling, aggressive, sometimes violent. And every time she'd get rid of one and think she'd found a nice man, only to discover he was just the same. And it turned out that she was actually looking for that sort of person subconsciously herself, because in her past life, she'd been the very same sort of man. And she'd treated women very badly. And so in this lifetime, she felt that she deserved to be treated like that. So subconsciously, she was actually going for that sort of man and actually blocking out any nice man that came along.
Yeah.
But once she realized what she was doing and how pointless it was, you know, it was totally pointless to do that to herself, she stopped doing it.
Yeah. I imagine part of that subconscious reasoning there is that she wants to know what it's like to experience the way that she was to other people in that previous life.
Yes, absolutely. But, you know, that's not a productive way to live, is it?
I don't know. we're here to learn lessons and experience. I guess that will have its place somewhere in that person's experience.
That's very true. Yes, that's very true. But, you know, in her case, she really had enough of it and wanted to meet the right person and stop wasting her time with all these others. You know, I think if she was here to learn a lesson, as you say, to experience that, then she'd done that and she could let go of it now and start
now,
to...
In your book, Souls Don't Lie, which you've already mentioned, you remember under hypnosis the life you had as Madeline and with Ryan Fitzgerald, who proved to be an American country music singer who you contacted. And it would seem that in that lifetime, in the 1600s, that was quite an astonishing period, because you say it was a tale of love, sacrifice, murder, death, renewal. Tell us a little bit about that life and how you connected it with Garth Brooks.
Well, how I connected it with Garth Brooks came at the very beginning, before I even realized that it was a past life I was looking at. At the time, I didn't, relate to past lives. I'd never really thought about it. All I knew was that despite having apparently everything everybody could want in their lifetime, I was very deeply unhappy, in as much as whenever anything good was about to happen to me, I always spoiled it for myself by creating a problem, real or imaginary, and spoiling the occasion for myself. And I came to realize that it was because I didn't feel like I deserved to have anything happen to me. I was always saying, you know, something's going to spoil it. I was always expecting something to spoil everything. And it did, because, you know, we do create our own reality, and that's what I was doing. And one day I was so low that I was sitting alone and even contemplated suicide briefly, although I don't think I would ever have really left my husband, who I love dearly. But I suddenly had this feeling that something was going to change, something was going to happen. And I was expecting some amazing vision or something to happen. I just got very excited for no apparent reason. And then I heard this voice in my head say, "Turn the television on." Which, like, was a bit astonishing, because I wasn't expecting that sort of a mundane message at all. But I did, and there on the screen was this man who I later identified as Garth Brooks. And from that very second, everything changed. All of my depression went. It was most puzzling. I had no idea why. I started writing songs. I lost weight, got a new job, moved house. Everything changed. And this went on for about 6 months. I mean, my husband was very delighted, but just as puzzled as I was. And it was another person, you know, one of these teachers that comes into our life momentarily just to tell us something, who I was talking to her and saying, "But I don't know this man. I've never met him." And she said, "Not in this life." And instantly it was like a light going on. I knew that was it. It just felt real. It felt true. And so eventually I went for past life regression, my very first one. And I'd hoped that I was going to reveal some gentle, happy, romantic story. But whilst it was in its way romantic, it was also brief. I only knew the man for 3 years. It was brutal in as much as he was abducted and taken away and actually sent into the army, where he died a very violent and tragic death. And then as Madeline, not able to recover from his loss, I actually threw myself from the roof of the house. And that was very strange when we went back to the house, looking up at that window and knowing that I'd jumped from that window. It was very surreal. So that's kind of the story in a nutshell, and that's what started me on all this. And the next thing that happened was that I had an angelic visitation, which showed me what my role in this life is going to be. Now, that's what my book, How to Be Happy, concentrates on, because the answer to true happiness is happiness that comes from within, because that can't be affected by what's without, what comes from without. And the way to that happiness is by knowing your purpose in this life. And my purpose turned out to be a seed planter, in as much as I was to plant seeds spirituality in people, not necessarily about reincarnation, but about anything that took people away from the normal materialistic way that we live nowadays, all the grabbing onto as many possessions as we can, when all the time, you know, deep inside we know it's all pointless, because you literally can't take it with you, can you? And it's really spiritual wealth that we need to accumulate. And once I'd accepted that, that's when I started being given the gifts to make it all happen. That's when my life really started to happen. It wasn't easy. My first book was self-published, and it was sponsored by a very dear friend of mine. Yeah. Then that got picked up by a very small publisher, and I wrote two books for them. Then I got sort of headhunted by a middle-sized publisher, up until quite recently, when I've finally been accepted as an author for Hay House, which is like really exciting.
Right, yeah.
That's really exciting. Completely different direction, mind you, but very exciting nevertheless.
Oh, yes. But going back to your life again as Madeline, did you have any difficulty in finding evidence of that lifetime, because you seem to know a lot about it?
It's very difficult to get any written evidence, because of the period was immediately before the Civil War.
Yeah.
Of course, during the Civil War in England, when they were fighting the Scottish, so much got destroyed, and the house that Madeline lived in was a French Catholic house in England, though, but they were French Catholics.
Yeah.
And, of course, Henry VIII came along. Sorry, that was before. He'd already come along. And at the time of the Civil War, Catholicism was banned, you know. The people used to have priests hidden in their houses in secret rooms to hold masses. If they were found out, there was serious trouble. And so after that, most of the records of in Catholic churches, which of course a lot had been destroyed, the evidence was all destroyed. However, I'm not really too worried about that, because if you go looking for evidence of that kind, you know, it's just too easy for people to say, oh, you saw it before, and so you've just got the evidence and then made up the story. So you can't win. If somebody doesn't want to believe you, they won't believe you, and that's their prerogative, isn't it? But we did find an awful lot of good evidence. Like, I'd recalled that the man I was married to at that time, Ryan Fitzgerald, was actually the illegitimate son of one of the Earls of Kildare in Ireland.
Oh.
And we were actually able to find out that the names all tied up with the real people of the time and the real places of the time. I was also, of course, able to find the house and identify it by certain unusual features that Ryan and Madeline had lived in. I was also able to find the church that they got married in. And interestingly, as we approached it, I said to my husband, this village is wrong. It's in the wrong place. The houses are lined up wrong. It doesn't look right. And when we got to the church, there was actually a painting in the church of the village, how it used to be, just before it was burnt down by fire, not long after, as Madeline, I had died. And in the picture, it was exactly how I described it to be, and it was situated where I described it to be.
Oh,
so,
right.
You know, there is evidence, but you're never going to get conclusive proof that would convince everybody.
Oh, no.
Because,
no.
You know, we're not supposed to, are we? The challenge is to find it out for yourself, not have somebody foist it upon you.
Yeah. Did you find any evidence of the possibility that you may have also been buried in the grounds of the same church?
Well, I didn't personally, and I think as a suicide at that time, you wouldn't have been buried in the churchyard.
Oh, I see. No, no.
Mm. But a very good friend of mine, who was in that lifetime, is quite interesting. She was the editor of a country music magazine, and a bit sceptical about my story at first, because, of course, she knew how famous Garth Brooks was, whereas I didn't at the time. And eventually, she started to have visions of the lifetime herself, and we came to realize that she was actually there. She was actually called Nancy. She was the cook and really Madeline's surrogate mother in that lifetime. And it was her in a vision who told me that Madeline was buried in the garden, and that if I was able to search it at any time, which I haven't been able to because obviously there are people living in there, there's actually a carved stone lion marking the grave, as opposed to there being a name or anything. So one of these days, maybe I'll be able to. It would be something quite weird, wouldn't it, standing on your own grave?
It'd
be very bizarre,
yes,
I think.
It would be rather strange, yes, indeed.
Yes.
Now, when you spoke about your book, How to Be Happy, and that is your last one, isn't it?
No, I've just had one come out called Forever Faithful, which is about dogs that return to us.
Oh, I see, right, yes, yes.
My dog in particular. And in May, I have my first Hay House book, which is called Pets Have Souls Too, which, as said, is a big departure. Then I've got one with them called Angel Whispers, because, golly, I was in an article in the Daily Mail a couple of months ago, and it was about angels.
Really?
And I got, there are so many people out there who not only believe in angels but are desperate to connect with their angels. I had hundreds and hundreds of emails after that article. I couldn't believe it.
Yeah.
It was amazing. And so, of course, teaching people to connect to their angels isn't that easy. It's not, there's no magic pill. It's not a quick fix. And so Hay House asked me to write my second book, which comes out in September, which is a bit of a manual on how to connect to your angel. It's kind of hopefully foolproof. I really do believe that if people follow it from start to finish, they will definitely connect to their angels.
Yeah. Jenny?
Yes.
Yeah, in those last few sentences, you were hardly, I was hardly able to hear you. You faded away then, so perhaps you could repeat the last bit.
Yes, I was saying that, did you get the bit about the Daily Mail article?
Yeah, following on to that, yes.
Yes, I received absolutely hundreds and hundreds of emails, and I'm really sort of gratified and amazed at how many people not only believe in the existence of angels, but desperately want to connect with them.
Yeah.
And trying to help these people is not that easy. It's not a quick fix. it's not easy connecting with angels. If it was, everybody would be doing it every day. But I've written this second book for Hay House, which comes out in September, called Angel Whispers.
Right.
And this is a kind of a guide, a manual, taking people right through how to connect to their angels. And although it's quite involved, I do firmly believe that if people follow the instructions in it to the letter, step by step, they will definitely be able to connect to their angels.
Right.
Of course, we all know that you can't... Sorry?
Yeah, carry on.
You can't get anything from angels unless you can actually ask them for help. And you can't ask them for help if they can't hear you. So
right.
Basically, this book is teaching you how to reach a state where they can hear you, and then you can ask them for help.
Does that involve any form of meditation?
Oh, yes. That is one of the things, yes. But I don't take people straight to that, because so many people say they can't meditate.
Right.
So there's lots of other things that will lead you up to that, so that hopefully by the time you reach that stage, you'll be ready to achieve it.
Yeah. So it's really a matter of quietening yourself down and being receptive to a contact with them, I take it.
Sounds easy, doesn't it?
Yes.
But you've also, of course, got to raise your own vibration, because angels don't live in the same dimension that we do.
Right.
And in order to go up a level to their dimension, or at least meet them halfway, you have to raise your own vibration, and that's of course what meditation achieves.
Right, yeah. Now, just getting back to, I think you said was one of your more recent books, Happiness from Within. I believe you related that to people wanting to find out their purpose in life. Now, I would think that question is one that arises many, many times, because people find it difficult to work out why they are here. How do you set about doing that?
Well, I think the only way to realize what your master plan is, what you came here to do, is to understand the whole of your being, because if you can do that, then inside your higher self, we get back to your higher self, knows what you came here to do. It's just that you've forgotten. You had a plan when you came here. And most children probably still know what that plan is, but they get changed, they get molded. You know, parents shape us, they want us to fit into society, and the last thing they want is a child that seems different. And I was certainly different, and I certainly had people trying to change me, and schools do it, and employers do it, and even spouses do it sometimes, and we get changed out of all recognition. And that really is the challenge that we come here to face. It's to bring all these elements of ourselves back together. We're kind of fragmented. And one of the ways that I've found that is one of the quickest ways to do that is to start recalling your past lives. Because if you don't, you're suffering from a sort of amnesia of the soul. It's just as hard to remember what your purpose is as it would be if in this lifetime you were struck with amnesia and you couldn't remember your family or your job or where you lived or anything like that, or even your name possibly. You just wouldn't be able to function. Your life would disappear. Your purpose in life would disappear. And it's the same thing if you don't remember all of your past lives, or at least some of them, to give you an idea of how you've progressed to where you are, then how are you going to remember what you came here to do? And it seems to trigger the answer in a lot of people. And that is the ultimate way to be happy. In the meantime, past life regression can also, as we've said before, solve a lot of the problems, a lot of your blockages in this lifetime, a lot of the things that are holding you back.
Now, so how do you feel that people get much information about their past lives through dreams?
Oh, that can happen, yes. I do know people that have done that. I mean, the first inkling I had of my own, my first past life, actually came to me not so much in dreams, but in nightmares. I had a nightmare of somebody trying to rape me, and it was a recurrent nightmare, and it was so incredibly real, and I had it for about 8 years, and it was absolutely horrible, and it wasn't until I went for several past life regressions, because obviously you don't get all the information in one session, that I came to understand that that wasn't, as I dreaded, something that was going to happen in the future. It was something that had actually happened in the past life. And that was one of those nudges that I was talking about that we get.
Oh, yes.
Trying to remind us of our past lives.
Do you think that if people do get some recall in their dreams, they would know that it is such a thing because it's more vivid and more realistic?
Yeah, I mean, I always say to people that the most telling thing is in the strength and duration of the emotions that you get. If you say you were watching a scary film, you might be scared while the film was on, but half an hour later you wouldn't be scared at all because it wasn't real. But if you have one of these dreams and when you wake up in the morning you're still crying, and every time you think of what happened during the day, it makes you cry again. And if this, the memory of this dream lives with you, and if it's recurrent, then it's very, very likely that it's not a dream at all, but it's actually a past life memory.
Mm. In your book, How to Be Happy, what was the basis of the title in the sense that I guess everybody wants to be happy? What are you actually referring to? Does that also relate to past lives?
Yes, How to Be Happy is full of examples of people who had problems and how they were solved by going for past life regression.
Yeah.
It's everybody wants to be happy, but people don't always realise that there are two kinds of happiness. There's the happiness you get from what comes from without, such as winning money or getting a new job or buying a new car. But those happinesses are all transient, and they can be taken away just as quickly by removing the object that created the happiness. Whereas happiness that comes from within is the happiness you get from understanding yourself and from understanding your reason for being here and achieving what you came here to achieve. You get so much fulfillment from that. I mean, as I said, I was given gifts to help me fulfill my role as soon as I accepted it. And you get such a sense of fulfillment from doing what you came here to do, that it creates happiness inside you that simply can't be taken away by outside influences. I mean, life is not going to be perfect. It's not meant to be perfect. We are, as you said, here to learn. My life certainly isn't perfect, although some people think it is. But what it does is it gives you the strength to cope with the things that life throws at you without becoming totally miserable. And
right.
It gives you great happiness when you do succeed in what you came here to do. And that could be anything, you know. I mean, it could be being president of the United States, being an astronaut that flies to the moon, or it could be somebody being a really good parent or creating a lovely garden. Some people, in fact, just came here to rest and recuperate, and they're worried that they're happy just doing that. But actually, once they realise that's what they came here to do this time, then they're okay. They stop worrying about it.
Yeah.
It's very complex.
Is the basis for being happy also achieved through a better spiritual understanding?
Oh, I would say so, yes. You know, I mean, like I said before, and you know as well as I do, Mike, that money's not everything. possessions are not everything, but spiritual understanding, faith, and the fulfillment that comes from doing what that faith sent you here to do is the important thing. If you've only got to look at very spiritual people, like Buddhists, for instance, you know, who won't harm anybody, those people are so tranquil because they are spiritually enlightened. It changes everything, you know, because we're all running so fast to try and keep up with people, and we like to have the best of everything and better than our neighbours. But what good does that do? It doesn't make your neighbours like you, it just makes them envious. The world has all gone backwards, hasn't it?
Certainly hasn't gone very far forwards.
No, that's right. But are you an animal lover, Mike?
Oh, yes, indeed, yes. My particular favourites have been cats, although I haven't any at the moment.
Well, if you buy Pets Have Souls too, make sure you've got a box of tissues with you. It's really heart-wrenching stories. It's funny, yes, isn't it, how spirit works? Because when Hay House offered to look at some ideas from me, I naturally proposed stuff about past lives, because
that's
my thing, you know, I thought. And they quite astonished me by saying no, they wanted me to do this one about pets and the fact that they have souls. And they wanted me to research lots and lots of stories of people who had experiences, you know, mostly with their pets after their pets had died.
Oh, yeah.
And at the time I thought, well, how strange is that? But actually, as I started writing it, I realised that what they'd actually done was taken me home, because animals were always my first love, always. You know, from a small child, I interacted with animals, I understood and could communicate with animals, and I always have done for all my life. And animal welfare is a subject that's very, very dear to my heart. So being given this opportunity, not only to share these wonderful stories with pet lovers, but also perhaps to change the way some people see animals and treat animals, was an amazing opportunity. I was very, very pleased to have it after all that.
Yes. Now, I know that some people see their pets after they've passed on, or they see the ghost of them, if that's the right way to describe it.
Absolutely.
What brings them back to people? Have you any idea?
Well, I'm glad you said that, actually, because Forever Faithful, which came out, when did it come out? It came out this month, that's right. It came out about a week ago. That's the story of my little dog, Casey. Now, I had another dog called Ace, who I lost about 4.5 years ago. And she was one of these dogs, like I'm sure you've had cats the same, where they're almost human.
Yeah.
And she was set on fire as a puppy before we had her. And she and I developed this relationship that, you know, we were like sisters. It was an amazing, amazing relationship. We were always together. So naturally, after 15 years of her being with me every day, when I lost her, I was absolutely devastated. I didn't think I would ever get another dog, ever. And because we were kind of free, we went on holiday to Arizona. And while I was there, we went to a place called Sedona. I don't know if you've ever been there. It's the most amazing spiritual center in the middle of the Arizona desert. And while I was there, I had a reading with a psychic, a German lady called Claudia. And she gave me a wonderful reading, and then when she got to the end, she said something quite strange. She said to me, "Have you recently lost a dog?" So I said, "Yes." And she described the dog to me, and she was describing my Ace, who was a big black dog. She was German Shepherd cross Labrador. And she described her to me, and she said she had a message for me, and she said she wanted me to know that that day she was young again. And at the time we thought, you know, she means she's young again, you know, she's in spirit and she's young again. as we like to think that all our loved ones will be young again when they cross over. And so we went home, and that had been September the 13th. And when I got home, a couple of weeks later, I found an advert from the local paper for a litter of puppies, and I kept getting drawn back to it. I kept thinking I'd thrown it away, and there it was again, you know. And in the end, I said to my husband, look, I'll just phone up. I'm not going to get one, but I'll just phone up to satisfy my curiosity. And when I phoned up, they'd been born on September the 13th, which was the day that I'd had this message from Ace to say she was young again. And it crossed my mind, you know, is that what she meant? But I sort of dismissed it. But we went to see the puppies. And when Ace was a couple of years before she died, she'd had to have a mammary tumour removed. And so she had a teat, a nipple missing from her tummy. And we went to see these puppies, and all of them rushed out of the room. The farmer opened the doors, and they all rushed out except this one who just sat there looking at me. And the farmer said, oh, I'm sorry about her. He said, she's not very friendly. She tends to bark at people. But she's all right, really. So I crouched down, and this puppy came across and climbed up on my lap and just looked up at me. And I looked at my husband. He looked at me. We looked at the puppy. And then she turned over in my arms to show me her tummy, and she had the same nipple missing.
Well, I never.
She was born like that.
Yeah.
So then, you know, naturally, we had to have her. There was no question about it. And I became firmly convinced that she was Ace, had come back to me. Mm-hmm. And a medium friend of mine said that she'd come back to me because she was supposed to become a person in her next lifetime, but she knew that I wasn't doing well without her, so she decided to come back again to us, come back as a dog so that she could be with us again. And a couple of weeks after that, as if I needed any further evidence, there's a psychic artist called Juna Lenny Lane, and she emailed me and she said, Jenny, I've had a message come through from a German Shepherd crossed Labrador, a big black dog, who's in spirit, or, you know, part of her, as we said before, her divine part was in spirit. And she got June to draw a picture and said, this is what I look like now. And in Forever Faithful, there is a photograph of that drawing and a photograph of the new puppy, which we call KC, side by side. And it's the same dog. There's no question about it. It's exactly identical to the photograph, which, of course, June and Lenny had never seen.
Mm.
So that was, you know, I didn't need any further evidence, really. And then I came to discover that I'd actually known this dog in at least four different lifetimes.
Well, I never.
So I have a friend called Madeline Walker, who I think you've spoken to on the show. She's an animal communicator, she will tell you that we do have the same animals come back to us time and time again. They actually, you know, walk alongside us. And now, of course, you know, researching for the Pets Have Souls 2 book, I've come across many people who believe the same thing, that their animals have reincarnated and come back to them. So it's quite comforting, I think.
Yes, yes.
To know that.
I think you can say truthfully, the dog chose you.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Which brings me to your book called Forever Faithful.
Mm-hmm.
Because you mentioned that when we rescue an animal with the intention of healing them, they end up healing us. So,
that's right.
Can you enlarge upon that idea?
Yes. I mean, have you ever noticed how energy travels?
Yeah.
How it travels between people, and it travels between us and our pets as well.
Right.
And you absolutely can't fool your dog or your cat. And if you find yourself moaning about your dog because it's being totally balmy, or your cat is just pestering the life out of you and won't leave you alone, being hyperactive, That's because that is what your energy is doing. You might be sitting there fooling the rest of the world, looking all calm and collected, but underneath your energy is, you know, a seething mass of whatever's disturbing you, whether you're excited or whether you're upset or whether you're grieving or angry, and your pet feels that energy. And they try to counteract it with their own. You know how you'll get an animal that will act the clown when you're depressed and yeah. sort of jolly you out of it. And that is one of the ways that they do heal us. And if you're trying to re-educate yourself to be calmer, this is all tied in together, isn't it? Because being calm is the only way that you can connect to angels. It all comes round in a big circle. And if you think you're being calm, but your dog is misbehaving, then you're not calm.
Right.
And you'll notice that if you sit very quietly and deliberately calm your whole body and calm your breathing, you'll suddenly look around and the dog will be curled up asleep. So you can kind of use them as a barometer. If you think you're calm, but they're misbehaving, you're probably not calm at all.
Right.
I also know animals that have taken illnesses on themselves.
Really?
To protect their owners. Or they use some apparent misbehaviour to flag up to the right person that the owner has actually got a problem rather than the dog. You know, we're all connected. Every life form on this planet is connected, and quite frankly, that's why the whole place is going down the drain, because people just aren't realizing that. They're treating animals as commodities and claiming that they're not sentient when they clearly are.
Yeah.
I do think within a few...
Yeah?
Sorry?
I was going to say, what you mentioned there about animals in one way reminds me of an article I read not very long ago that spoke of these dogs that have the ability to indicate to their owners when they're about to have an epileptic fit. I suspect you've probably read the story yourself.
Yeah. Yes, it's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, how can anybody think that we're not connected to these animals? You know, we so obviously are. I mean, there's a video on YouTube that you might like to look up. If you put in motorway dog, something like that, it's quite extraordinary. It's a motorway camera, I think it was in Chile, and it's a very, very busy motorway with several carriageways, obviously.
Yeah.
And a dog attempts to cross one of the carriageways, and it's obvious it's not going to make it because it just rushes across sort of blindly. And it's a bit tragic to see, but it's worth watching to see what happens, because this poor dog is hit. It's not gory because it's at a distance,
no.
But it's quite obvious that the dog has been killed. Happens quite quickly.
Oh dear.
And then you see another dog appear, and this dog looks across at where what's obviously his friend is lying dead in the road, and he starts to make his way across the lanes of cars, and you know, very carefully and very intelligently he manages to dodge all the traffic and makes it to the dog that's been killed. And then instead of he obviously wants to move the dog that's died, but instead of getting hold of him in his teeth like you might expect a dog to do, he stands at the dog's head and he puts his front paws sort of over the other dog's paws into his armpits, so to speak.
Yeah.
And he drags the other dog backwards, like this, step by step, pulling him along, like, you know, like you'd grab somebody under their armpits and pull them backwards.
Yeah.
And he takes this dead dog all the way back across all the lanes of traffic.
Gosh.
And lays him on the grass at the side of the road. And then he leaves. Now, you know,
it's incredible, isn't it?
Why did he do it?
Yes.
Did he do it? And when he reached the other dog, even if he didn't know before, when he reached him, he must have known he was dead.
Yes.
And yet, he had some sort of respect for his friend's body that made him not want to leave him there to become just a smear in the road, you know, which is what would have happened eventually.
Yes, yes. Incredible.
That's extraordinary.
Now, getting back to your books again, if you were asked which one would be more beneficial to someone wanting to know about past lives, which one would you recommend?
I think probably it would have to be Past Life Angels or How to Be Happy.
Yes.
Although Past Life Angels next spring will be superseded by Soul Angels.
Yeah.
But at the moment, yeah, I would say when it comes to past lives, Past Life Angels has always been the best-selling of my books.
Has it? Yeah.
It's the one that I get most people telling me they've read and telling me it's helped them.
Where are your books available from? Can they buy them direct from you?
No. Amazon is probably the best universal place to buy them from.
Yes, yes.
Obviously, they can be bought in bookshops and bookstores, but probably Amazon is the most universal place to buy them. And there are links where you can go to buy them on my website.
Right, yes. While you're there, you might as well mention your website address.
Okay, thank you. It's www.jennysmedley.com. Nice and simple. I'm actually having a new one done as we speak. It's hopefully going to go live
yes.
this weekend. That's kind of scary.
Right.
My website might be old, but it, you know, I know it. I know how to work it.
I'm asking these questions so that you can get your sort of advertising bid in, because we're coming up, believe it or not, to the last few minutes of the program, and I have to announce next week's guest.
Okay.
What else do you do apart from your books? I mean, are there any other activities that you invite people to get involved in? Or?
Well, I am starting to do talks, but of course they're all in the UK at the moment.
Yes.
The details of those are on my website. But I do what I call mirror angel readings, where I create a portrait of your angel and answer your problems through this angel. And I also do remote aura readings. Unfortunately, I'm not doing them right at this moment because I'm just too busy with other areas, but normally that is what I do.
Right, so if people want any of those readings, do they email you or telephone you?
Email.
Right.
Yeah, I do it all by email. So, you know, everything, the books and the readings and everything, all the details are on my website.
Well, perhaps even so, you'd like to give your email address out. I guess we might have some listeners who haven't always got all these facilities.
That's true, yes. My email address is author, that's A-U-T-H-O-R, at globalnet.co.uk.
Right, that sounds pretty good. Well, I'm very pleased to have you on again. We haven't actually run out of things to talk about. I could have asked you, I guess, a little bit more about your other past lives that you found out about, but we haven't really got time now. At least I think I'm correct. Did you indicate on your web that you're aware of six previous lives?
Yes, at least.
At least,
you get more every day, actually.
I do well. You'll be able to write another book about your own personal previous lives.
Oh, golly. I don't know where I'll find the time.
Anyway, yeah. Very nice to have you on, Jenny. Thank you very much.
Nice to talk to you, Mike. Thanks very much.
Been a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you.
And you, thank you.
Right, my friends, next Friday, my guest will be Lou Valentino. There's a fine name there. Just to put it in a nutshell, he is... when I find my paperwork here to look at. Got put under the rest of my bits of paper. Yes, he's been teaching Hatha Yoga for about 5.5 years, and he's been meditating for 30 years, which he does every day. And he's also written a book, which I guess is about the same subject. So that will be a little bit different, perhaps, from the usual program. So I hope you can join me. and I will thank you all for being with me today. God bless you all.